Hi, this is Terry Manning, and you're listening to 90.7 FM, WGXC Accra.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. Today, live around 9:30 a.m., we'll speak with Colony resident Jack Fallon Underwood, who has just announced he's running in New York's 20th Congressional District election. He will be running as an independent in the June Democratic primary against incumbent Paul Tonko in New York's 20th District. We'll talk to him about why he's running and more, and we'll also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And all begins after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
On air, in air, channel connection, and the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network, network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Victorian-era Valentines of Schaefer, Minnesota. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Nick Reisman is reporting for New York State of Politics that incumbent New York Governor Kathy Hochul remains the frontrunner in the June Democratic primary, according to a Siena College poll released January 18th. Hochul took office on August 24th, and at this point she is way ahead of her rivals, U.S. Representative Tom Suozzi and New York City public advocate Juman Williams, as well as former New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio. De Blasio announced after the poll was released that he would not run for governor. Hochul is supported by 46% of the Democrats polled. The former mayor drew 12%. Williams is supported by 11%. And Suozzi, a Long Island congressperson, received 6%. Hochul is the choice of 40% of Democrats in New York City and 40% of downstate suburban voters. State Attorney General Letitia James, a Democrat seen as Hochul's most competitive rival for the nomination, withdrew her bid in December and opted instead to run for a second term as Attorney General next year. Quote, with 22 weeks until the primary, it appears Hochul is in the catbird seat to be the Democratic nominee for governor, unquote, said Siena College pollster Steven Greenberg. Quote, Hochul approaches support from nearly half of Democrats, 46%, up from 36% last month, before James, who had the support of 18%, exited the race, unquote. The poll found voters support Hochul's proposal to allow restaurants to sell to-go beverages 55% to 34%, Voters also back her proposal to expand programs in prisons that would help people get jobs once they are released, 79% to 14%. And 77% of voters support term limits for all statewide elected officials as proposed by the governor through a constitutional amendment. The poll of 806 registered voters was conducted from January 9th to 13th. Read more about this story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com.
Luke Parsnow reported for New York State of Politics that New York Governor Kathy Hochul's first proposed budget is a $216.3 billion spending plan with investments in a post-pandemic world. On January 18th, Hochul released her first budget proposal with $2 billion in pandemic relief funds, including $350 million for businesses as well as theater and musical arts, and $1.2 billion for bonuses for healthcare workers, and $1.6 billion for upgrades for healthcare facilities.
We need to embrace this moment of possibility and use it to redefine New York's destiny. How? First, by rebuilding our healthcare and teacher workforces, providing tax relief to those who need it the most, speeding up economic growth and creating good-paying middle-class jobs, strengthening our infrastructure and confronting climate change, securing public safety and protecting our communities, making housing more affordable and ensuring every New Yorker has a roof over their head, enacting bold reforms that will restore trust in state government, and we're changing the culture and creating workplaces that are free of harassment.
Hochul is also proposing $31.2 billion for education aid, an increase of $2.1 billion, and spending for child care would also be increased by $1.4 billion if the legislature goes along with Hochul's proposal. You can read more about this story at New York State of Politics.
Michael P. Norton is reporting for the State House News Service that Massachusetts is poised to receive $1.1 billion in new federal bridge repair money over the next 5 years. U.S. Representative Richard Neal announced the money estimate on January 18th, crediting the work of Congress and President Joe Biden to pass an infrastructure funding bill. The money will be allocated under a Federal Highway Administration formula and can be used to fix 472 bridges listed in poor condition in the Commonwealth. Quote, modernized and improved bridges statewide will provide safety for all users and create good-paying jobs for workers, unquote, Neal said in a prepared statement. Quote, bridges are vital pieces of our infrastructure, not only to our daily commutes, but also to emergency vehicles and the trucks that are making deliveries in our communities, unquote. States normally must match federal money with up to 20% in state or local money, but guidance issued last week indicated that federal money can be used for 100% of the cost of repairing or rehabilitating, quote, locally owned off-system bridges, unquote, according to Neal's office. Neal, along with Springfield Mayor Dominic Sarno, made the announcement at an Armory Street site. City planners hope to replace two bridges in Springfield. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle.
Robert Gabin reports in the Times Union that Coymanstown Supervisor George McHugh wrote a letter to a federal judge asking for leniency for William Tryon, a local farmer who pleaded guilty to taking part in the January 6, 2021 attempted coup of the U.S. government. McHugh wrote the judge, and I quote, I hope you find it in your judgment to sentence him to a punishment that is commensurate with his actions of that fateful day, absent a period of incarceration, end quote. McHugh made sure the judge knew he was Coyman's town supervisor. But McHugh, who is a lawyer, wrote as if though he did not know that Tryon had pleaded guilty when he already had. He also wrote he was, and I quote, aware of the accusations and charges levied against Bill, end quote, and was, and I quote, completely taken back by what has been stated he did, end quote, and called Tryon's admitted conduct, and I quote, allegations, end quote. Video shows Tryon storming the Capitol and also standing atop a vehicle there that day singing Twisted Sisters, We're Not Gonna Take It. Assistant U.S. Attorney Anita Eve said Tryon did not express remorse until an interview for a pre-sentencing report. She stated, and I quote, it is only when the consequences of his actions have caught up to him that he is showing any regret. But there have to be consequences rather than a mere slap on the wrist, end quote. Tryon, 71, was sentenced on January 14th to 50 days in jail with a $1,000 fine and $500 in restitution. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Melanie Lukosovic is reporting for Capital Region Independent Media that the Queenmans Town Board is considering the possibility of extending the town supervisor's term from 2 to 4 years. If the board agrees to double the length of the term, the change would go into effect after the 2023 election. Deputy Town Supervisor Daniel Baker introduced a proposal at the January 13th board meeting. But we did a little research on this. All of Albany County government, everybody, county executive, comptroller, the sheriff, everybody in Albany County government is all 4-year terms, unquote, Baker said. Quote, the village of Ravenna, everybody there is also a 4-year term. The only one in the town of Queemans that is not a 4-year term is the supervisor's seat, unquote. Town board members, town clerk, and highway superintendent all serve 4-year terms. The law would include a mandatory referendum, giving voters a chance to be heard on the issue. Current supervisor George McHugh was reelected to a second 2-year term in November 2021, and the seat will be up for election again in 2023. During the town board discussions, McHugh stressed that if the change is made, it would not apply to the term that just commenced. Quote, if the mandatory referendum passes, it has nothing to do with the term I am in, unquote, McHugh said. It is for future terms, which I may not be a part of, so it has nothing to do with me, unquote. McHugh noted that a 2-year term makes it difficult to complete long-term projects such as the park renovation currently underway. No decisions were made on the proposal during the January 13th meeting. Read more about this story at theupstater.com.
David Robinson and Mike Stucker report in the Poughkeepsie Journal that for the week ending January 16th, New York added 360,560 new COVID-19 cases. That sounds like a lot, but it's down 39% from the previous week's tally. At her public address January 18th about her budget proposal, Governor Kathy Hochul touted statistics showing COVID-19 cases waning. Read more about this story in the Poughkeepsie Journal.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Wednesday, mostly cloudy with a high near 39 degrees. Wednesday night, a chance of rain and snow showers before 1 a.m., then a chance of more snow showers. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 24. And on Thursday, a slight chance of snow showers before 1 p.m. It will be partly sunny with a temperature high near 26 degrees. And Thursday night, partly cloudy with a temperature low of around zero. And that is your weather update from WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on the radio on Wednesday, January 19th on 90.7 FM, including at 9 a.m. We'll hear live from Colony resident Jack Fallon Underwood, who is a candidate in New York's 20th Congressional District. He's an independent running in the June Democratic primary against Paul Tonko. At 10 a.m., it's time for the Synth Eclectico show, today with tracks from Eben Koda, Hobuki, and Art Wilson, among others. Then Mayuko Fujino is live in Acre at 11 a.m. with Your Voice Touches My String. Spike Priggin is live in Catskill from his Main Street record store, Spike's Record Rack, at noon after the local news until 2 p.m. At 7 p.m., we simulcast live the WBAI show Off the Hook. It's run by the Hackers at the 2600 Collective. And Peter McPartland is solo tonight on Rock and Roll High School at 8 p.m. Jeff Economy is live from Ulster County with Snack Point Charlie at 10 p.m. And then we stay in Ulster County for 2 more hours with Peter Aaron on his Go Go Kitty show, simulcast from Radio Kingston in Ulster County and on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes.
Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
HateWatchReport.com, a local tracker of racist and right-wing activity, reports that three people from the New York chapter of the hate group White Lives Matter held a banner January 14th in front of the gazebo in the park in Chatham. The group had been recently placing recruitment stickers on park benches, parking meters, utility poles, and road signs in Hudson and Stockport, and have posted a video of a meetup in North Greenbush. On January 14th, three white supremacists were seen holding a banner for the group in the village square in Chatham. The identity of the three racists was obscured by mask and winter clothing. The Southern Poverty Law Center, which tracks hate groups nationally, says the White Lives Matters group first formed in Texas about 7 years ago by leaders associated with neo-Nazi groups. In response, the HateWatchReport.com group is urging local residents to attend a counter-protest at noon January 19th at the Village of Chatham gazebo.
Five, four, three, two, one.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Cheryl Kay, host of Situation Fluxus on WGXC, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. The show is a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more that airs on Thursdays at 10 a.m. and Fridays at 4 a.m. To contact us about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance at gmail.com or info at wgxc.org. Keep tuned in to 90.7 FM, wavefarm.org/listen, tune in, and on the Wavefarm Radio app on your smartphone. Our website is wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, January 19th. Early morning temperature range is 18 in West Durham and 20 in Smithfield. That's pretty tight, so things shouldn't vary too much across the listening area today. It will get relatively warm, but also windy. Gusts are expected around midday. Watch for blowing snow. A high temperature of 40 degrees happens at 3 p.m. Overnight temperatures fall slowly, hitting 27 degrees by dawn. Snow will fall after midnight, ceasing around dawn. Only a dusting is expected. Thursday starts at 27 degrees and falls to 22 by dark. Stiff winds put conditions at freezing, so bundling up will be necessary if going out. Thursday night, a low of 2 degrees will have taps dripping. Friday will have a high temperature of only 14 degrees, then another very cold night. The weekend still looking dry and cold. High tide today will be at 3:52 a.m. Low tide, it will be at 10:04 a.m. High tide again at 3:47 p.m. and low tide again at 10:50 p.m. Today's river temperature will be holding steady at 32 degrees. Sunset today will be at 4:38 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:15 a.m. Looking way up, we see yesterday a solar flare caused a radio blackout over South America. Solar wind speeds are up. Geomagnetic unrest is expected. Auroras could appear as far south as New England. Solar plasma speed is currently 632 kilometers per second at 10.4 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. Those conditions could change at any time given the current solar activity happening right now. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 6, storm level. The current sunspot number is 59. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Maker Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Brendan Donegan of Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners.
They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Are you tired of your flying saucer always breaking down on your way to Mars?
Wish you could get more bang for your whoopee at the gas pump?
Well, here at Flying Saucer Mart, we have the perfect flying saucer for you.
It goes as fast as light. It comes in a variety of colors and only costs you 75 whoopee.
Come down to 375 Bionic Ave in Pluto City and fly home with a new used flying saucer today.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
The eyes of the nation will be watching what happens this week in the United States Senate.
Debate continued Tuesday on Capitol Hill over the future of voting rights, even as the package appears dead on arrival. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer accused Republicans, who have voted several times to keep the bills off the floor, of blocking a formal debate on the legislation. By combining the two separate bills into an unrelated measure, the Democratic leader was able to bypass that roadblock and bring the package before the Senate.
When this chamber confronts a question this important, one so vital to our country, so vital to our ideals, so vital to the future of our democracy, you don't slide it off the table and say, never mind.
Democrats still haven't secured the necessary 60 votes to overcome a final filibuster and are weighing options to clear that hurdle. The Senate will end the debate, kicking off a final vote on the package and setting up a filibuster showdown this week. The Biden administration is highlighting plans to allocate $27 billion in federal funds to replace and repair America's bridges. The initiative is being funded via the bipartisan infrastructure law and seeks to repair more than 15,000 bridges across the country. The project is being coordinated by Mitch Landrieu, the former New Orleans mayor who oversaw the final stages of the city's recovery after Hurricane Katrina.
This infrastructure work in general is not a one-time economic stimulus. It is not a race to see how many ribbons we can cut before the end of the year. Doing this is going to require balance. It's going to require order. We are definitely going to go fast, but we are not going to hurry, and we are going to get it right.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken is traveling to Europe and Ukraine this week in an effort to reinvigorate talks between Russia and Western allies. The discussions come as Russian troops have been amassing along the Ukrainian border in recent months. In a conversation with the Washington Post on Tuesday, America's UN ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield said Blinken's trip was in response to recent moves by the Russians to bolster their presence along the border.
And any actions that we've seen that the Russians have taken that may indicate that they're moving forward will cause us to ramp up our efforts as well in terms of our engagements with our partners.
Finally today, a federal appeals court has passed along a challenge to Texas's abortion ban to the state's Supreme Court. Politico reports that reproductive rights groups wanted the issue sent back to a lower court, which previously blocked the law. The appeals court's decision will prolong litigation over the ban, which means the law will be left in place for now. The policy bans most abortions after 6 weeks and allows private citizens to sue abortion providers who violate the law. I'm Jonah Chester for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Thank you.
All right. I'm Tom Rowe, and you are listening to the WGXC Morning Show. That was the Thinking Fellows Union Local 282, Gentleman's Lament. And before that, we heard the Yellow Jackets theme on the WGXC Morning Show. Now we are speaking with a candidate for office who's just announced. Jack Fallon Underwood is joining us here on the WGXC Morning Show. He's running for Congress in the 20th Congressional District in the Democratic primary against Paul Tonko in June. Is that all right, Jack?
Yeah, that's all right. And thanks again for having me.
Thanks for being here. And you just announced the campaign, or tell us, give us the backstory and tell us what your story is. And you're calling from Colony today?
Yep, I'm calling from Colony. I just announced earlier this month, immediately got COVID after the announcement, so the campaign started off on a rocky foot. Why I'm running is just after, I think in a previous interview I said it was the January 6th insurrection, but that just kind of strengthened my resolve. Prior to that, I had just seen so much division in this country. Throughout the Trump presidency, it seemed like two sides were moving away and refusing to listen to each other. I think just now Trump's pulled out of the presidential debate in 2024. So the signs look like the country is schisming. I am running on a simple platform. I only want to campaign on two bills. Instead of listing a bunch of promises that don't happen or I can't accomplish, I will either pass the bipartisan majority bill and the anti-corruption bill. And if they don't pass, I'll step down. I won't run again. It's as simple as that.
First, you are the only candidate that's running for the 20th Congressional District that wasn't in Washington, D.C. on January 6th last year. Is that true?
I don't believe so. There are three other candidates other than Tonko in the Democratic primary, and there's also the Republican Liz Joy. I do not know where they were on January
6th. Well, you do know that Liz Joy was in Washington, D.C. at the rally to supposedly stop the steal on January 6th.
So, this is news to me.
No, she was at the rally. There's video that there. You know, she was there. So that was the point of my. There's two other people in the Democratic primary besides you and Mr. Tonko?
Yes.
So have you run for office before?
No, I have not run for office. This is the first campaign. I don't plan on being a politician, and I don't really care for running for office, but I figured somebody's got to, you know, take responsibility for this country.
And Mr. Tonko's a you know, wins his elections handily every time. I think the district is set up for a Democrat, but why would you challenge a Democrat?
I don't think that the 20th Congressional District can be satisfied with Paul Tonko debating a Republican every 2 years and saying the same talking points in the same culture war. I think for the democratic process to work in a district like ours, there needs to be primary challengers every 2 years.
And do you think he does a lackluster job? I mean,
yes, I think corruption is rampant in Washington, D.C., and he has been absent from hundreds of elections where he could be going around the state supporting candidates who are running on an anti-corruption plank and actually passing some common sense laws. He has fundraised $8 million since he first started running, but his district has been blue for the last 50 years. So I don't really feel that money is going to the right place. He spends it on political consultants and media agencies. where he could be spending that money and that time across the state helping out districts that don't have as much anti-corruption movements, and finding candidates to run for seats that aren't being held by somebody who support an anti-corruption plank.
And well, let's get to that in a second. But first, are you concerned that you don't even know what the district is yet?
I'm very concerned. In fact, when I declared, it felt kind of hollow to say, hey, I want to be a representative for a group of people who I'm not even sure it consists of. But I figured might as well get all the paperwork, and if the district changes, we'll make that adjustment. The recent independent commission released a map that kept the 20th district looking pretty similar as how it looked 10 years ago, which, if you had listened to any of the hearings, was basically what everybody in Schenectady, Troy, and Saratoga and all they were asking for. There is a chance that the legislator completely draws something foreign to us, and I'll have to adjust. But for now, I'm kind of focusing my campaign in my immediate neighborhoods, districts that I know I will represent. And hopefully by March, when we have a bigger picture, I can kind of move out to the outer regions and campaign there.
Yeah, it's a weird election year that the June primary is going to be here before we know it. And since we don't know the lines yet, I think it does seem like you say that most analysis say that the 20th will kind of stay the same. The 19th may have some more radical change. But there have been early versions of the redistricting has shown some weird things. So you never know what might happen, because they're gonna end up negotiating a political settlement in the legislature, right?
Yeah. Those early maps, it looked like a drain, and Albany was the center of this, like, three-way spiral.
So, tell us more about these. You said at the beginning these two bills that you'd really like to do are at the center of your campaign. What are these two bills, and what exactly would they do?
The first one is pretty simple. It calls for an Article 5 constitutional convention. I believe that our Congress is not working, and a lot of that has to do with the money that is flowing onto both sides. And in order to reform that and put in some of these regulations on representatives that everybody across the country wants, we need to make another body. The constitutional convention I'm calling for will ask for delegates who have never held political office before and should be barred from holding political office for another 10 years after the convention. This way, we can prevent them from writing any constitutional loopholes that would benefit them. I would obviously not be eligible to be a delegate once I become a representative, but the changes I hope that can happen are things like reversing Citizens United, putting some pay guards on representatives, making sure representatives and their spouses can't trade and buy stocks. And I'd love to see a constitutional amendment that protects our data. I know big tech is just constantly collecting our biometrics. And before you, I mean, Heritage.com and Ancestry.com, they're collecting our DNA. It's pretty scary how our current constitution doesn't mention anything about technology.
Go ahead.
Oh, that's the first bill. To fully answer your question, I got to talk about the bipartisan majority bill. Public trust in the federal government has been hovering around 17 to 20%. This number really scares me. I don't know what's going to happen when public trust in the federal government falls to 10% or 5%. I think we need to put a bill to regain people's confidence in the federal government. And what it does is it takes things that there's a bipartisan majority agreement. It's not a long list, but things that Republican voters and Democratic voters both agree on, but the representatives refuse to pass. These things are like passing the DREAM Act, increasing the amount of immigration judges who are at the border, common sense police laws, making police officers wear body cameras, establishing a national registry for police misconduct, banning the chokehold, things that seem like they'd be pretty easy to get done, but for some reason our leaders refuse to do that.
And what kind of impact? First, is it even possible to get something like this done? It seems like Congress is so dysfunctional, and if I have this impression, that's probably why the poll numbers you cited at the beginning were so low. But it seems like getting elected to Congress is like becoming a glorified service representative or something. All you're doing is constituent service. You're not passing any bills. You know, they don't pass any bills. It's a dysfunctional unit.
I totally hear you. What I want to do is take these two bills, and instead of trying to convince 200 Republicans to get on board, I want to convince the 20 Democrats who represent New York and the 6 Republicans who represent New York. Because if we can't unite the New York delegation, if we can't unite Long Island with the Finger Lakes, with the Capital District, with the boroughs, we will never be able to unite New Yorkers with voters who live 2,000 miles away in Arizona. If the representatives in New York resist the constitutional convention and the bipartisan majority bill, that's when we have to start running anti-corruption candidates to take them out of office. I think there would be a high reception. I feel like Republicans in New York are a little bit more reasonable than Republicans across the country, I hope.
I mean, several of them were at the Stop the Steal rally or voted against. Actually, yeah, several of New York Republicans voted against approving the electoral results. They voted to overturn a fair and popular election. I mean, I'm not sure if all New York – I mean, the guy running for governor that's a congressman now voted against the fair election results.
This is true. This is true. But you are talking about the loudest Republicans. To me, I'm thinking about the Republican voter who hasn't voted since 2012 and feels completely isolated from the system and lives in New York and says, my vote doesn't even matter. I'm in such a blue state. Some of these conservatives aren't necessarily registered Republicans. And again, they won't even be able to vote for me in this primary, but I think I'd definitely have a lot better chance if I was running an open primary. I think once we get the New York delegation together and in agreement, it will put pressures on other states to actually hit some bipartisan majority strides. It's a daunting task. I'm not saying it's easy. It definitely was going to require a young person with a lot of energy. But if we can unite New York, we might have a chance to unite the rest of the country.
And if you just tuned in, we're speaking with Jack Fallon Underwood, who is running in the Democratic primary in the 20th Congressional District, which covers Albany County and much us of the Capital Region. So you got COVID right away when you announced, and now COVID is pretty bad, although hopefully it's coming down quickly as fast as it went up this latest wave. But how are you going to campaign, and what are your plans to campaign?
That's a difficult question. I'm really playing it day by day. Common sense tells me that come March, when the district will be hopefully drawn, COVID won't be as big of an issue in this area, considering we got hit so hard during the winter. But if for some reason COVID spikes, there's a new variant, I'll just have to be campaigning 6 feet apart, wearing a mask, and doing all the safety protocols we've been doing for the last 2 years.
Do you think the federal government has had the correct response to COVID, or would you vote to, I don't know, a lot of it's just mandates from the president, more than congressional acts. But I guess, are there bills that need to be passed in light of the pandemic?
It's yet to be seen if 2023 we're going to be facing more COVID. I've not liked the federal response. I don't think a lot of people have. I don't think we need any federal mandates. I feel like the state mandates are already pressuring enough small businesses as it is. And New York State's response has been pretty good, but I don't think the federal government needs to be mandating stuff on small businesses.
What about on the other end? Musicians and people who own live music spots where, you know, you shouldn't really be going the past 2 or 3 years, you know, are in pretty bad shape. We can go through the healthcare workers are decimated and you know, I don't think they have the strength in numbers that they once had. And maybe there should be some incentives or higher pay for people, you know, really working frontline jobs like teachers and janitors and you know, I don't have the answers. I'm just asking the questions. Are there professions that need help? Are there specific businesses that you think need help, or is it just the whole economy? Does everyone need a tax cut? I don't know. What are your ideas besides combating COVID-19, but recovering, everyone recovering from? I mean, does the whole country need mental health services provided to them at this point?
No, I'm listening. I think what my plan does in the bipartisan majority bill will lower college prices for public institutions. And this way we can get more teachers and more healthcare workers. I feel like a big barrier to entry, because are we going to be able to convince 55 and 60-year-old retirees to come back into the workforce? I don't really think so. I think we need to start convincing more young people to take these public service jobs. And by doing that, in order to do that, we need to make public college cheaper, you know, approaching that free price tag. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, no, that's a good answer. How can you defeat an incumbent who has a giant war chest of corporate donations?
The plan is to debate Paul Tonko. And when the voters of the Capital District see me next to Paul Tonko and me saying new ideas, new plans, promises that I will not run for office 7 times after I'm elected, compared to Paul Tonko, who's saying the same climate change speech he gave in 2008, I think the choice will be very clear. If that debate happens, or if the New York Democratic Party puts up barriers to entry to that debate, it will be a little bit more tough. But my plan is to beat him on the debate stage.
Here's a question I've been wanting to ask Paul Tonko for a couple years. I guess he gets money from the National Association of Broadcasters. He gets a lot of donations from the National Association of Broadcasters, which is an organization that radio stations contribute to and has very conservative views. And I certainly don't agree with anything the National Association of Broadcasters does, but they made those donations to Tonko, and he's backed a bill backed by the National Association of Broadcasters to give anyone operating a pirate radio station an insane, like, 5 years in jail and $5 million fine or something just absolutely draconian and ridiculous. Are you in favor of that, or Do you have any radio policy opinions?
Oh, I could not be less in favor of that. I think it's not a surprise that the National Broadcasting Association, because I feel like 90% of radio stations are big and corporate and conglomerates. I'm a huge supporter of independent radio. Is somebody operating a pirate radio potentially hurting somebody? Probably not. But if they were operating a pirate radio station and it messed with a broadcast and messed with some advertisement, I could see there being some, you know, legal recourse to recoup the money that was potentially lost. But there's something very American about pirate radio that I'm having trouble not romanticizing it right now.
Well, the thing too is that, like you said, most stations are corporate and beamed in from, you know, Los Angeles or Waco, Texas, or wherever their headquarters may be. But if you talk to the few people that do actual radio in local communities, almost all of them have some background in pirate radio. Somewhere along the line, as an engineer in college or something. What other issues do you disagree with Paul Tonko on?
I feel as if Paul Tonko hasn't done enough on climate change. He still puts up thousands of plastic lawn signs across the district that, as we said, is set up for a Democrat to win, and then goes out and preaches about green energy. Whereas there's just so many small little things that he does just to be part of the Democratic system that is not green and is not for the environment. There was actually a protest going outside his Albany office every Tuesday asking him to do more on climate change. Yeah. So that's just one thing.
It seems strange to me that climate change is like sort of the thing he's known for. If I could think of one issue to tie him to, but then, like you point out, the left has been attacking him for not nearly doing enough with these protests every Tuesday.
I think there was a bill to halt fossil fuel projects that Tonko didn't sign up on, which is big because Tonko is the only member of Congress to sit on all three major committees with responsibility with dealing with climate crisis. So the fact that he's, you know, resistant to the Green New Deal is troublesome. And I don't want to say that's my biggest gripe with Tonko, because my fear is if we pass a Green New Deal with too much haste, a lot of that money is going to go to corrupt individuals. It's going to be going to block grants that get distributed to state official friends. I feel like before we can really tackle the climate, as important as it is, we need to clean up Washington and put up some stop gaps for corruption and dark money.
And again, if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Jack Fallon Underwood, who is running for the 20th Congressional District seat in the June Democratic primary. Jack, do you have a website address you want to give out or some way to contact you?
It's my last name. It's FallonUnderwood.com. That's Fallon as in Jimmy, Underwood as in Carrie.com.
And you don't have a Jack joke too yet?
No, I don't have a Jack, though.
Was there like a specific moment that like you said, well, I need to run for Congress, or did something happen in your life that triggered this?
I have a 10-year journal where every day I journal, so I might be able to look back and find the point. But every time I'm asked this, 100 reasons come to mind of why I have to. And kind of the image, the point is, I just remember being at work and seeing people just kind of like put their hands to their ears and stop. It's just when people stop listening to the other side. It was 2017, 2018, 2019. It's just, I just worry about, you know, democracy in the country. And I want to be able to tell my kids someday that when people storm the Capitol, that I actually tried to do something and I actually tried to heal the divisions before I went off and just taught music and played music and, you know, built my wall.
And so how do you, you know, how do you talk to the other side if the other side is talking about overthrowing the government?
That is hard to do. And I do want to say that I have talked to a lot of leftists and a lot of socialists who talk about overthrowing the government. So it's happening on both sides. And by, first of all, by recognizing that, you start to have some conservatives feel like you're listening. But I feel like this country is being run by the 20% of the most extreme left and the 20% of the most extreme right. And everybody in the middle is not trying to overthrow the government and not trying to, you know, cause any kind of civil strife. These conservatives who aren't trying to control the government are fed up with the federal government. And if you talk to them and bring up the issues that are in my bipartisan majority plan, they do listen. If you bring up the anti-corruption bill and the Constitutional Convention, conservatives listen. It's a shame that they can't vote for me in the primary, but I do think that there's merit to what I'm saying, and I do think that there is hope in uniting them. The people who are trying to overthrow the government, you can't talk to them. They're too far gone. But you can take away the 20% of standbyers who are kind of allowing it to happen by not standing up against division.
So I was going to agree with you and say, like, if you listen to Republicans talk, they actually are saying the exact same thing about Democrats, that Democrats are trying to overthrow the government, even though there wasn't an armed insurrection of Antifa. You know, and Antifa, of course, is a group that started in 1926 and it's just simply anti-fascist. It's not any group of whatever. But I want to push back on the second part of what you said was that it's 20% of the left is running things. No, it's centrists that are running things. It's Nancy Pelosi, not crazy leftists. It's Nancy Pelosi, the centrist of the centrists, who blocked the bill a couple weeks ago to the stop people for politicians from the stock thing. You know, they get briefed on that this COVID virus is going to happen. It's going to happen. We're going to have to do all these things. And they're on the first phone call they make is to their stockbroker to buy, you know, stock in masks. This sounds like a joke, but there's, you know, we have some records of some Congress people doing this. You know, it's not super available. But it's the centrists that are blocking those kind of reforms that you're talking, the kind of basic reforms of, like, you know, it clearly Congress people should have their stocks put in some sort of blind trust. You know, you can own stocks, but you shouldn't be able to use your office to make personal money because you have insider information.
I totally agree. I think the representatives making millions of dollars off the pandemic is heinous and a crime. When I said 20% of the left, I wasn't really speaking about representatives as much as I was talking about 20% of the left is controlling the narrative, you know, the social media, the things that are coming up on our news feeds. I think everybody in Congress, except for a select few, are pretty much centralists because, you know, being a centralist is how you stay elected. Does that clarify?
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah. So I realized I went through that whole soliloquy, and we're now just have a minute and 15 seconds left. So again, we're speaking with Jack Fallon Underwood. Jack, give your website again for people to get more information.
It's FallonUnderwood.com. That's Fallon as in Jimmy, Underwood as in Carrie.com.
And so we got a minute left. What do you want to tell people? What's your minute elevator pitch to get people to come out and vote in the Democratic primary in June?
I'm an independent running in the Democratic primary. I do not want to be a politician, but somebody needs to take responsibility and bring this country together. I do not think Paul Tonko is that person, and he hasn't been that person for the last seven terms. Thank you, Tom, for having me, and appreciate everybody, and I hope you guys have a good rest of your January.
All right, again, we were speaking with Jack Fallon Underwood, running in the 20th Congressional District. That's the mostly capital area district, but it covers all of Albany County. So if you're listening in Albany County, you got another choice in June. Thank you for joining us, Jack.
Thank you.